Chapter 18. Sudden panic staring. Sees a tallish fellow, sort of nasty handsome face, heavy eyes, half shut, short drab overcoat, shabby bowler hat, very careful like in his movements. And he thinks to himself, is that how such a man looks? No, the thing's impossible. Cleat does the introduction, and the fellow turns round to look behind him at the chair, before he sits down. A thoroughly competent man, Cleat goes on. The man says nothing, sits perfectly quiet. And George can't speak, throat too dry. Then he makes an effort. H apostrophe M. Oh yes, unfortunately sorry to disappoint, my brother made other arrangements going himself. The fellow gets up, never raising his eyes off the ground, like a modest girl, and goes out softly, right out of the office without a sound. Cleat sticks his chin in his hand, and bites all his fingers at once. George's heart slows down, and he speaks to Cleat. This can't be done. How can it be? Directly the ship is lost, Harry would see through it. You know he is a man, to go to the underwriters himself with his suspicions. And he would break his heart over me. How can I play that on him? There's only two of us in the world belonging to each other. Cleat lets out a horrid cuss word, jumps up, bolts away into his room, and George hears him there banging things around. After a while he goes to the door, and says in a trembling voice, you ask me for an impossibility. Cleat inside ready to fly out like a tiger and rend him, but he opens the door a little way and says softly, talking of hearts, yours is no bigger than a mouse's, let me tell you. But George doesn't care load off the heart, anyhow. And just then Captain Harry comes in. Hello, George boy. I am little late. What about a chop at the Cheshire now? Right you are, old man. And off they go to lunch together. Cleat has nothing to eat that day. George feels a new man for a time, but all of a sudden, that fellow Stafford begins to hang about the street, in sight of the house door. The first time George sees him, he thinks he made a mistake. But no. Next time he has to go out, there is the very fellow skulking on the other side of the road. It makes George nervous, but he must go out on business, and when the fellow cuts across the roadway he dodges him. He dodges him once, twice, three times, but at last he gets nabbed in his very doorway. What do you want? He says, trying to look fierce. It seems that ructions had come in the basement of that boarding house, and the widow lady had turned on him being jealous mad, to the extent of talking of the police. That Mr. Stafford couldn't stand, so he cleared out like a scared stag, and there he was, chucked into the streets, so to speak. Cleat looked so savage as he went to and fro that he hadn't the spunk to tackle him, but George seemed a softer kind to his eye. He would have been glad of half a quid, anything. I've had misfortunes, he says softly, in his demure way, which frightens George more than a row would have done. Consider the severity of my disappointment, he says. George, instead of telling him to go to the devil, loses his head. I don't know you. What do you want? He cries, and bolts upstairs to Cleat. Look what's come of it, he gasps. Now we are at the mercy of that horrid fellow. Cleat tries to show him that the fellow can do nothing, but George thinks that some sort of scandal may be forced on, anyhow. Says that he can't live with that horror haunting him. Cleat would laugh, if he weren't too weary of it all. Then a thought strikes him, and he changes his tune. Well, perhaps. I will go downstairs, and send him away to begin with. He comes back. He's gone. But perhaps you are right. The fellow's hard up, and that's what makes people desperate. The best thing would be, to get him out of the country for a time. Look here, the poor devil is really in want of employment. I won't ask you much this time. Only to hold your tongue, and I shall try to get your brother to take him as chief officer. At this, George lays his arms and his head on his desk, so that Cleet feels sorry for him. But altogether Cleet feels more cheerful, because he has shaken the ghost a bit into that Stafford. That very afternoon he buys him a suit of blue clothes, and tells him that he will have to turn to and work for his living now. Go to see as mate of the Sagamore. The skunk wasn't very willing, but what with having nothing to eat and no place to sleep in, and the woman having frightened him with the talk of some prosecution or other, he had no choice, properly speaking. Cleet takes care of him for a couple of days. Our arrangement still stands, says he. Here's the ship bound for Port Elizabeth. Not a safe anchorage at all. Should she by chance part from her anchors, in a northeast gale, and get lost on the beach, as many of them do, why, it's 500 in the